Well, it's that time again, and the doctor is in. I'm glad you could join us again this week for Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon. And I'm Dr. Bill, and you're not. But then you knew that. So that didn't come as any shock or news to you. All right. Well, I'll tell you what, we have some exciting things on the podcast this week. First of all, sorry that it was delayed. Okay, I had a lot of things going on, a lot of traveling and so forth, and it was even delayed a little bit further than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was just going to be delayed till Saturday evening, but here it is, Sunday. Ta-da! Well, it is as I record this. I don't know when you might be listening. After all, podcasts are almost live, but they're not live. So, we've got several exciting things to talk to you about. First of all, many weeks back, actually, I proposed an idea, and that idea was that you would send me questions and I would send you answers in the podcast. And guess what? Somebody actually did that. So, for that individual that sent me a question, here's your answer. They're asking a question about fishing, P-H-I-S-H, fish, fishing versus farming, P-H-A-R-M, farm. So, fishing versus farming, what is the difference? And that was the question they asked. So, here we go. Fishing involves the receipt of an email message that appears to come from a legitimate enterprise, let's say PayPal, okay? But it is mainly an email-oriented problem in the sense that you're receiving an email from an organization that appears to be an organization that you might, you know, be participating in, like PayPal or eBay or something like that. Farming, on the other hand, attacks the DNS server of a given website. It doesn't really have anything to do with email. That's why I say that phishing is email oriented. Farming has to do with the DNS server. The DNS server is the domain name server. And you can think of a DNS server as like a phone book for all of the IP addresses. Each machine on the internet has an IP address. And if you are offering a website, you don't call your website 24.172.117.16, although that is technically its number. No, in fact, you would call it www.thecomputercurmudgeon.com, for instance, which is our website. So that name has to be associated with the IP address or that number. Okay? So, in that case, the DNS server serves out the number that the computer needs in order to find thecomputercurmudgeon.com. So it maintains that information. Now, what a farming attack does is compromise the DNS server and redirects you to a hacker site when you type in a legitimate company's web address. So let's say you wanted to go to paypal.com, so you went to your browser and you typed in www.paypal.com, and it actually took you to Joe's I'm going to steal all your money.com that has disguised itself as paypal.com. Okay? That is a farming attack. It takes you to a site you originally did not intend to go to. So that's the difference between phishing and farming. Obviously, phishing has to do with you being aware that when you get an email, you have to really understand and know where that email is coming from. Farming is a little more, there's less you can do about it because it really has to do with how secure your DNS server is that your ISP is making available. So you want to use an ISP that is pretty much on top of things, you know, not Fred's local ISP necessarily. Although, you know, never know. Fred could be a really good, you know, geek and he knows what he's doing with his DNS and maybe Time Warner might not be quite as good, but, you know, for the most part, a large company like Time Warner, Roadrunner, whatever, is going to be pretty much on top of, at least you would hope, their DNS situation. So, there you go. There's your answer on phishing versus farming. And I've already emailed the answer to the person that wrote, but I just wanted to share it with everybody else. I thought that was pretty cool. If folks want to continue to do that, just send me questions, and I'll try to answer it on the podcast. And you'll at least get the doctor's version, whatever it happens to be. The other thing that I had was a really nice email from somebody that you know, sometimes you get something that just kind of makes you think, wow, hey, great, this is actually helping people. And this was one of those cases. I'm not going to give the individual's name, but I do want to read the email. It says, I just want to thank you for your podcast. I'm a Mac user of 10 years. Great. Amen. That's good. Because Macs run Unix, which is, or at least BSD, which is closer to Linux. So that's good. That's non-Microsoft, so I like that. But anyway, it says, I'm a graphic designer, a Christian. In January, a client blessed me with an HP Pavilion 4900. Whoa, hey, that's good. I was converted to a Mac PC Gatewalker. Well, as long as you're still using your Mac, okay. And I understand with the PC, that's a great PC. So, you know, matter of fact, I use an HP Pavilion laptop. It's a 5000 series ZX5000. So, you know, hey, I'm down with that. But anyway, goes on to say, your podcast gave me confirmation that I need to seek legal software or open source. I'm going to download OpenOffice as soon as I rid my computer of all of its spyware. I have faithfully downloaded everything you recommended, and I'm on my way to no longer doing dumb things and being tough. There you go. There you go. My donation is not much, but I will periodically extend them to you. You're doing a wonderful work on this planet. Now, there you go. That'll make your day. I appreciate the donation, and I also appreciate the fact that you think that we're doing wonderful work on the planet. Hey, there you go. You know, that kind of makes your day when you get things like that. So I really do appreciate it. Well, let's look at some of the things that have been happening on the blog this week. We're actually doing quite a bit of blogging, and a lot of it has to do with things that are good hints and tips. As long as we're in a helpful mood here, let's continue with that. One of the things that I blogged on was the fact that you need to protect yourself from third-party cookies. Now, let me kind of back up on this and give you the background of why I put it in the blog as an entry this week, or this past week. I was watching a show that had Leo Laporte and Steve Gibson. Steve Gibson's a security expert, and he runs a site, grc.com, and he puts out some software that I have used for many years. Almost as long as I've been working with PCs, I've been using his software, Spinrite. Spinrite is an excellent program. It's written in very low-level language, assembler, and it gets down into the nitty-gritty and actually reads your hard drive and optimizes your hard drive and will recover bits that you have lost on your hard drive and sectors and so forth, and actually recover them for you. And very often you can have a hard drive that is completely died, and you can run Spinrite on it, and it will bring it back. You know, and very often you can use that to bring it back enough to get it to reboot again, get to your stuff, and rescue your data. But I've seen it actually, you know, take care of a hard drive to the point that it would just continue to run and be a good hard drive, even though it had actually died, because it brings it back that thoroughly. You know, I don't know whether you would necessarily want to trust it, but at least it'll bring it back enough you can get your data, and that makes it worth, believe me, the amount of money you pay for Spinrite, because it's very relatively inexpensive program for what it does. So I've long been a customer of Steve Gibson and GRC, and he has a lot of other things that he does. He does a program on the web called Shields Up. You don't have to buy anything. You just go to his site and run the program Shields Up off of his website, and it will show you very readily what ports you have open in your particular setup. So like if you're at home, you know, like I am right now, I'm connected to the internet using Roadrunner. I could run Shields Up right now on my PC, and it would show me what ports are open, whether or not my firewall is protecting me, and if it is in stealth mode, meaning that even if people try to access me, you know, if you're in stealth mode, they don't even see that there's an address there to hit. So that's even better than just simply being blocked, but in stealth mode, they don't even see you. And so his software, Shields Up, will show you that. And it's totally free. Just go to grc.com. And right there, that's a good tip for you. But anyway, that's just kind of a freebie. Because Steve Gibson was on with Leo Laporte, and they were talking about the problem of internet security. And one of the things that Steve Gibson mentioned was third-party cookies. Well, you know, I'd heard about cookies. A lot of people have gotten kind of, you know, upset and gotten all bent out of shape about cookies. And really, cookies in and of themselves are not, you know, they've kind of gotten a bad rap. They're not as bad as it makes you sound. You know, there's a lot of people that have come up with these different programs, you know, scrutinize your cookies and make sure that your cookies are the ones you want, and da 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 da, and all these kinds of things. Yeah, I'm not really that concerned about cookies, okay? Really, in order to explain that, we got to talk about what a cookie is. You know, we're not talking about the cookie you eat and it leaves crumbs. We're talking about a computer cookie, which is something that your web browser and the site that you are interacting with will use together to help you actually on a given website. For instance, let's say you go to a website and that website asks you for a piece of information that you, now get this closely, you want to give them for future reference. Some piece of information that you're sharing with them, like for instance, let's say it's a site you go to buy something, and you want to type in your name, your address, your information, and the next time you come back to that site and you hit it, it will come back and say, "Hi, Bill, you haven't been here since, you know, October, whatever." Well, how do they know that? They know that because they've set a cookie on your computer with the information that pertains to their website. Now, that can be a good thing because it helps you, makes it easier for you to interact with that website that you went to on purpose. That was your desire to go to that website to buy whatever it was that you were going to buy. And so, in effect, you have an agreement between you and the website or you and the people running that website that you are a customer and you have information that you don't mind sharing with them. Okay? That's kind of a given there. So that's a benign cookie. That's a good cookie, if you will. All right, but what Steve Gibson was talking about is a kind of cookie that isn't good. That's a third-party cookie. Now, here's how it works. Let's say that you go to a website that, just for the sake of argument, we'll call X.com, just to make it simple. You go to X.com, and you're going to buy something from them. Okay, so you register, and you give them information. But on the website X.com, down at the bottom of the page, they have a banner ad. Now, you're not interested in whatever is showing up on the banner. You're not going to click the banner. You're not even going to do anything with the banner. But the banner is appearing on their website at the time you are there. What happens is the people that are running that banner, and we'll just say, for lack of better, we'll call them Joe's Banner House, okay? That's who put that banner up. All right, they have that banner on the web page that has issued you a cookie. That banner is a third party to the interaction. In other words, you went to the website X.com on purpose, but you didn't control the fact that X.com is allowing Joe's Banner House to advertise a banner. But Joe's Banner House sets a cookie for you saying they saw my banner on X.com. Okay, all well and good. But then you go to Y.com, a whole completely different website, and Joe's Banner House is also advertising there. So what they do is their banner, which is on Y.com, sees the banner that, you were at X.com just a little while ago, and they make note of that. And then you go to, let's say, C.com, and again, their banner picks it up. What's happening? They're tracking your movements through the web with their banner. Now, the fact that the website that you went to implicitly, in other words, that you're a customer of, can set a banner is called a first-person or first-party cookie. The fact that the banner company sets a cookie on your system is a third-party cookie, and it's the third-party cookie that can track you from website to website, and then, now they may not know your name or they may not know your address, but they can get enough information that they can track your movements and then turn around and sell that information to other companies that are after logistics and so forth and that kind of thing. And actually, there have been cases of third-party cookies that have been used in ways that will kind of send a shiver down your spine. And as a matter of fact, Steve